listening to Miller and Moulton, exclusively on the Florida Sports Network. And now, here's Mark Miller and David Moulton.
And since it is the top of the 7 o'clock hour on a Tuesday, we are joined by David Sampson. He of the Daily Nothing Personal with David Sampson podcast. Weekdays, he records it live at 8 a.m. You can follow him on Twitter at David, the letter P, Sampson, David P. Sampson. David, good morning. Hope you had a good weekend.
I had a great weekend. Good morning to you guys.
Well, I knew you would have a bounce in your step, so to speak, because it looks like the A's aren't going to Vegas. And somebody said a few weeks ago, guys, this is not happening.
I've actually been saying it for years. That said, I have weight to seize from 2 years back. And my producer, Matthew Coca, started to put together a video that is a victory lap video. And I said, hold on, it's not quite time for that. But there is a big update today. The money did not come from the state. The session ended. There's possibly a special session where it could come up, but it was announced a few minutes ago that the agenda of the special session will not include this stadium financing bill. And I must tell you, I'm having PTSD because I went through this in Tallahassee. The reason I can talk about this issue is I've done this, and it's happening exactly as it always happens. But for whatever reason, people in the media and fans, they get this view that, no, this time it's different. But it's not.
Why do we always miss this then?
Because you're a good person, right? Because you're not willing to think the way I'm willing to think. You've been lucky enough to not be sitting on Capitol Hill of your state and waiting to know whether your bill is going to get out of committee and waiting to see whether it'll be waived to the floor, whether you can get a final vote right before the gavel, and then praying to God that if not, there'll be a special session where they have real things to address, but you want them to address your bit of state money. And it just doesn't happen. And when it does, it's mostly NFL. And when it does, it happens in a way more organized way than what's going on in Vegas. And it takes way more time. The Vegas thing has been an absolute disaster in my mind from the beginning. It's as though they had no one in charge who knew what they were doing.
Well, clearly, I believe, they thought they had the votes. They wouldn't have gone through with this. And I will say, David, this is fascinating. It seems as if everyone with a title had said, yep, we're going to vote on this. We're going to put it through. You know, it's not going to be easy, but we're going to get you the votes. You know, 60-40, 55-45, 52-48, whatever. We're going to get you the votes. And it doesn't even come up for a vote?
Yeah, so the reason it doesn't come up for a vote is when they know it's going to get voted down. You'd rather have it be a no vote. You'd rather have it be a no vote, as in don't vote, than actually have it be a no vote where it comes up and then fails. So right now, you don't have to say to Major League Baseball, hey, we're Las Vegas and we have no public financing plan, so you can't consider us for expansion or relocation. What you get to say, if you are the governor or the mayor, you get to say to Rob Manfred, hey, it just hasn't happened yet, but this is the process it takes. We are ready for a baseball team, be it expansion or relocation. If a no vote had come, then baseball says, well, wait a minute, you had a chance and you declined. Now baseball can say they've never actually declined the public financing.
Now what from the A standpoint, though, David? Because obviously you kind of explained what's going on in Vegas, explained it from a Major League Baseball in Vegas standpoint. But when you're, if you were running the Oakland Athletics right now, what would you be trying to accomplish?
So I would have known this was happening, and I would have made sure that I had statements ready. So I have not seen, and I'm leading off Nothing Personal in 55 minutes with this story, but I have not seen yet a statement from the A's after the legislative session ended last night, and then the special session was announced about an hour ago without this bill on the agenda. I'd need a statement ready saying, you know the old story from the movies? Every time something happens, remember A Few Good Men when Demi Moore would say, I strenuously object, and she went crazy? You're never supposed to do that. You're supposed to act like whatever's happening is supposed to be happening. So my statement would be, This was expected. We understood this is a complicated bill. We understand that it's going to take time to make sure that all the stakeholders have all the information before they make their decision. So we're totally fine with the fact that there was no vote. In the meantime, we expect to re-engage with Oakland, where we'd like to see if a deal can be put together, because the important thing is securing the home of the Oakland A's somewhere before the end of this year. That would be my statement.
And the reason we have paid such close attention to this is once they get this resolved, one way or the other, the Rays are on the clock, and then expansion looms. So Major League Baseball did not have a good last 12 hours in Las Vegas. Want to switch gears and talk Jokic. You drafted a bunch of players over many years. The 41st pick of the NBA draft is a throwaway pick. I mean, if you make the league and have a career, that's amazing. Never mind become an all-time great. Is this like Mike Piazza, Albert Pujols-esque here? No, I'm seriously. Like, was there a guy that became legendary that you passed on like 15 times and you're like, oh, are you serious? This guy's really good?
So it's interesting you're saying that. Baseball has something that basketball has only with its foreign players. In baseball, we worry whether a player is going to go to college when we're drafting a high schooler and they threaten to go to college, or if they're a two-sport star like Giancarlo Stanton. We worry that Stanton's going to go play football and not baseball. We worry back before slotting that a player and his agent will want too much money, because you negotiate before you draft a player. And so there are many reasons, not always skill, that a player falls in the MLB draft. In the NBA draft, when you've got foreign players, some of them don't want to come to the States immediately. Jokic did not come immediately. Some of them don't translate. Like some of the Japanese players come to Major League Baseball. Not everyone's Ichiro. There's plenty of Dice K's in there, right? If people remember who Dice K is, who was going to be the second coming of Jesus, and he ended up being, you know, basically nothing. Jokic is somebody, when you look at him, and if you look at him still today, he looks more like Bryant Reeves to me, or Paul Mokeski, than any other player. And I'm doing a real callback now to
the NBA's, he right? Just went early '80s Milwaukee Bucks.
I did. I'm sorry. I don't mean to do this to your audience, but I'm talking about sort of a, when you look at him, he looks like he's out of breath. He looks like he's always bleeding and scratched, and he's not graceful. And all of a sudden you realize he's the most effective big man. And this is a major statement, because I was the heart of Hakeem Olajuwon, and Patrick Ewing is my favorite player, and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Shaquille O'Neal, I've seen them all. I mean, after Bill Russell. He is the most effective big man I've seen, and this is not recency bias. That's how good he is, both passing and shooting from three, from two, around the rim, coast to coast. Patrick Ewing didn't bring the ball from coast to coast. Neither did Kareem. Neither did Shaq. Jokic can go coast to coast behind his back and put it in, and you just can't believe what you're watching.
There's no doubt that he is very special. And I love you bringing up the old guys, because now my brain started rolling through a few others that I'm thinking of what they're supposed to look like.
And he goes big country, Bryant Reeves from Paul Mokeski. I mean, you brought
as though I'm going old school, and it sounds as though I'm doing it by color, but I'm not. I'm doing it according to the way they carry themselves on the court. Right? Jokic, when you look at him, this guy's putting up 40 with 20 rebounds and 15 assists. And you just sort of look at him and you cannot imagine. And then you see him fleet of foot. I want to point out one more thing about Jokic, that I would rather have him to start a team than Giannis. Because people have been asking me that. If you could have one player, who'd you start your team with? And the reason it's Jokic is whenever Giannis does his Eurostep, all I do as a president of a team is think he's about to sprain his ankle. He's about to step on somebody and that's it. He's going to go down. He just looks more frail. With Jokic, I never worry about him. Because for whatever reason, he always gets back up and down the court, knock wood, never gets hurt, and he makes his teammates better, all of them, every day.
Jokic also doesn't airball free throws.
He does not. He actually hits his free throws, which is pretty remarkable, and he does it within 10 seconds. So all in all, I'm taking Jokic over any other player in the NBA right now.
David, the Miami Marlins are 5 games above 500 right now. Arise is nearly batting 400. And yet, a homestand of which they won 3 games, they drew less than 11,000 fans per game. Is there anything that can happen for this team to draw fans?
Well, let's start with the Panthers and Heat have to get eliminated. I mean, that's really been a nightmare for the Marlins, and they all pretend they're rooting for them, but no, they want them eliminated as quickly as possible because so there can be focus on the Marlins. There's been zero focus on the Marlins. But keep in mind, attendance is a lagging indicator. They're not going to all of a sudden start drawing big crowds this year, but if they have a good year and have a playoff run in October, you sell that into the next season through season tickets, and that helps your daily midweek attendance. You need that base that the Marlins just don't have.
Listen, Jazz Chisholm is hurt and has missed the last 3-4 weeks. The best pitcher in baseball last year is their fourth best starter this year, but their run differential is like minus 25. Is this a mirage? When you look at them, do you not see a team that could win 85, 88 games and challenge for a wild card?
I think their pitching is such that they can, and you say you're in a position where Sandy's not pitching well and they're still where they are, but they're also, because of the new balanced schedule, they've had a stretch here playing absolutely crappy teams. Now, you got to beat the crappy teams. You got to sweep the A's, right? You have to play well against the Royals, but that said, they've got a long way to go, and Arias hitting 400, not impossible. Unbelievable contact hitter, but he's being driven in now as well by other players. But I think that the NL East is too strong. Put it this way. I'll say it right now to you in my last 10 seconds. If the Marlins finish ahead of Steve Cohen's Mets, there's going to be a real problem in Queens. A real problem. Because of all the teams Steve Cohen does not want to finish behind, the Marlins are number one because he is personally financing the Marlins with revenue sharing. And it wasn't even a thought that they would be able to approach him given his payroll that is so out of control.
He is David Sampson. In about 47 minutes, he will begin Nothing Personal with David Sampson. He does it weekdays, 8 a.m. live. You can follow him on Twitter at David, the letter P, Sampson, David P. Sampson. David, as always, thanks for joining us. And you need to check David out on our Twitch broadcast because he is looking fine today.
Ah, shucks.
Got the hair slicked back, got the black sport coat on.
Isn't it time for a commercial?
You are looking lean and mean, my friend.
Goodbye.
David Sampson joining us here on Miller and Moulton. We did. I have to admit there are times in which we all look a little sleep deprived doing mornings. He looked pretty, you know, he looked pretty good this morning.
You're listening to Miller and Moulton, only on the Florida Sports Network. And now, here's Mark Miller and David Moulton.
21 minutes past the hour. Miller and Moulton, Florida Sports Network, floridasportsnetwork.com. Thanks so much for being with us. 21,000 is all you have to type in to text the show. Now, if you've never texted us before, you need to send a keyword with 21,000, that being FSN Radio. And once you do that, you're in. Text us whatever's on your mind. You can take in the show on the Miller and Moulton Twitch.tv channel, which you get to see the two of us and also some of our guests, like David Sampson, who we just had on, who had his black hair slicked back, had on a nice black blazer, looked like he was going out.
You were impressed with the wardrobe.
I was. Yeah, somebody who is not a good, decent dresser anymore. Used to be. High school, college, early in my television broadcasting career. Oh, man, I was one of the best dressed guys in the newsroom. And then I saw too many movies in which they're wearing jeans. Hell, they don't even tuck in their shirts. In fact, you're encouraged not to tuck in your shirt. Your shirt lays flatter. All right, and smoother, doesn't bunch up if you don't tuck it in and preferably sit on the back of it if you can. So then I'm like, well, hell. And then once you go to work in Florida, I mean, you know, come on, you don't even put on pants.
It was a very South Beach night fit from David Sampson.
Very much so.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It was. He's an East Coast guy.
Yeah. I mean.
The sport jacket still works over there.
Yeah.
We don't do that on this coast. We barely do a golf shirt.
Right.
You get a plain T-shirt.
Yeah.
Then you're dressed up.
I mean, I asked him, is that his grab the sport coat when you're heading to the steak place? And it's so nice they require you to wear a dinner jacket. And he's like, oh, no, this is above that. I'm like, oh, look at you. Listen, Mark, you and I, we can hold grudges. We're open about that. You know, could you imagine right now if you're the city of Oakland? Because when the A's announced they were leaving, I'm making us Oakland. We gave them the middle finger. We were just like, hey, we're not negotiating with you anymore. You're dead to us. Okay. And by the way, when your lease is up next year, even though your ballpark's not going to be ready till like 2027, don't think about playing in Oakland, by the way. We're getting rid of you the first day we can.
They're public enemy number one in that city. And there's not a lot of good things going on in Oakland right now.
No, not really. No. No. And they're the last pro sports team. You know, everybody else, the football team left. The basketball team went across, you know, the bay. They're in San Francisco. Left Oakland in the dust. Mm-hmm. And now, Mark, how many times would they have to call us for us to answer the phone?
David, if we're Oakland, and I think you and I are Oakland.
That's why I brought it up, because we are Oakland.
I don't know what they would have to do to get Oakland to answer the phone right now.
They would probably have to show up somewhere where we are to talk to them, right? I mean, who knows? I don't know. Find us at the grocery store. Something. You know, they happen to, we're at the same restaurant and they walk over. They go, hey, I've been trying to call you for months.
Yeah, they're going to have to figure out a way to bump into us.
Right.
And we are doing everything within our power to avoid going any place where we might see them.
Right. We're walking into places showing pictures of the owner of the Oakland A's. If this guy comes in, arrest him, by the way.
Running out back doors before they can bump into us. Pressing the door close on the elevator as they're running, going, wait.
No, sorry.
Not a chance.
No room. Nope. So that interests me here.
Well, it interests me because of what you brought up. Tampa's next. And yes. Oakland can't get out of their own way to get this stadium deal, which is buying the Rays more time. Or is it?
Well, in a way, the A's shouldn't matter because the Rays have a lease that expires after 2027. So in theory, the clock's already ticking. But Major League Baseball is not putting any pressure on the state of Florida or the Tampa Bay region until Oakland gets resolved. I mean, Bud Selig helped David Sampson get the Marlins a new stadium. I mean, Major League Baseball was all in, twisting arms, changing votes. They had people, politicians who were on the record voting a certain way. And when they got it back on the ballot the next time, they voted differently. Bud Selig was all in saving baseball in Miami. Major League Baseball hasn't done a thing yet. They do not want the Rays to move. They do not want the Rays taking up a great expansion market. So they need Oakland resolved. And then they're going to put all their weight, however much of it they want to lean on the scale with, Mark. You know, we haven't seen Manfred pull a Selig yet. He's been more worried about pitch clocks. He hasn't gotten involved with Oakland, and he hasn't gotten involved with Tampa Bay except to release a few statements. But that's why we follow this one closely. Because, you know, let's face it. Do we think any money's coming from Tallahassee?
Not a dime.
And David Sampson got money from Tallahassee. Now, he got most of it from Miami-Dade, but he got money from Tallahassee.
And there doesn't appear to be an avenue to get money from Tallahassee this time.
And by the way, the one thing that both owners of the Rays and A's have in common, neither one wants to dip into their front pocket and pay any money.
I mean, Sternberg talked about it with a couple of the different deals they were going to do. He was going to pay for his end by selling the naming rights to the stadium.
Right. So basically, if he can get Publix to put their name on the stadium, Publix will pay his $400 million, $20 million a year for 20 years. That's Stu Sternberg's idea of pumping money into this thing.
And that's been his only idea of pumping money into it so far. So that's the reason that we've paid attention to this Oakland situation probably a little more than most. Because it's the precursor to whatever is going to happen in Tampa. Time now for our Clutch Vodka play of the day. Felipe, what do you have for us today?
Hey, I don't know if you guys realize it, but the Texas Rangers are one of the best teams in baseball. They have the second best record in the AAL, in the league, actually, and they won on a walk-off last night.
Low bounces it left side and through base hit. Here comes Semien. The throw on the way. It's offline, and the Rangers win it. Just a little more pixie dust on this magical start to the season. Nathaniel Lowe with a game winner, and it's 4-3.
Marcus Semien extends his hit streak to 24 consecutive games. Nathaniel Lowe with the walk-off. Rangers, second best record in Major League Baseball.
39-20 are the Rangers, one of four teams 600 and above in the American League, along with the Astros, the Orioles, and the Rays. And that's our Clutch Vodka play of the day. That's Clutch with a K.
With a run differential, 59 games into the season, of plus 153. They're outscoring their opponents by 2.5 runs a game. That's like legendary stuff.
That's silly.
Yeah. I mean, the Rays run differentials like a buck and a quarter. And the Rangers are like, hold our beer.
Miller and Moulton, thanks for listening. We'll talk a little longest day in golf coming up. And taking your text as always at 21,000 right here on the Florida Sports Network.
Welcome back to Miller and Moulton, only on the Florida Sports Network.
Minutes before the top of the hour, Miller and Moulton, Florida Sports Network, floridasportsnetwork.com. Panthers got whooped last night. If it's possible for the game to not be as close as the final score of 7-2, last night was. Florida down two spit. They head home. Games 3 and 4. Thursday, Saturday. 5 NHL teams have lost the first two games of the finals and come back and won the cup. Two of them this century, in fact. The 09 Penguins and the 2011 Bruins. Of course, they didn't lose the first two games by a collective score 12-4. We'll see. Game 3 NBA Finals tomorrow night, Miami. Game 3 Thursday night, Stanley Cup Finals in Fort Lauderdale. Off night tonight. Unless you want to watch the Rays and the Marlins, a couple of playoff teams. So, longest day of golf was yesterday. Final day to qualify for the U.S. Open. And 36 holes, Mark. Man. This tournament grinds you. Remember, they used to do the 18-hole playoff on Monday. I mean, this has always been the toughest tournament in the sport.
And they like it that way. I mean, make no mistake, they love it being the longest day of golf. They like everything about it. In every one of these final qualifiers, more times than not, if you look at yesterday, how many of them went to playoffs? Where it's four guys fighting for three spots or four guys fighting for one spot.
Speaking of playoffs, Lucas Glover. And first off, let's just take Lucas Glover and have a little tangent here. Why does Lucas Glover have to qualify for the U.S. Open? He won it in 2009. If this were the Masters, the PGA, or the Open Championship, he's in. He's in till he's at least in his 60s. I mean, don't you find it interesting, remarkable, disturbing?
I don't find it disturbing. That in this tournament, you don't get a lifetime exemption. The courses are too hard. I don't need some guy going shooting 82-82. I don't.
But he's 43. Like, I'd even understand it if they gave you an exemption until you got to Champions Tour age. Because let's face it, I mean, it's difficult even for Longer and them. Just to make the cut in the U.S. Open is tough. Never mind to, you know, challenge. But I mean, it surprised me, Mark. First, I'm like, wait a minute, he's got to qualify? Didn't he win this thing? And then you look up and he's 43. It's like, wow. Goes back to just, you know, USGA. They don't mess around. Yeah, you won it. Congratulations. We'll give you 10 years. Then after that, what have you done for us lately? So, Mark, he goes out, 36-hole qualifier. He shoots 63 in the first round. I mean, basically, you know, throw a bunch of pars up on the board and you're in.
Right. I think he was two up on the field after the first 18. I don't think anybody even shot 64. I think there was a couple of 65s, but he was too clear of the field after the first round.
Well, it turns out if he had shot even par in his second round, he would have made it. But he shot one over, 73, and he was in a playoff. Mark, did you see the putt that he missed to be eliminated from the playoff?
I did.
Mark, have you ever missed a putt that short in your life?
Probably.
And by the way, you're about a 15 handicap, right? 12?
A little better than that. I think I'm a 10 these days, but yeah.
Okay. So you're a 10 handicapper, which is funny, by the way, because you do nothing but complain about the state of your game.
Because I can't play to my handicap.
Okay. So, Mark, was that putt 2 feet?
Oh, yeah. Not much longer.
Wow. I honestly don't think I've ever missed a putt that short. Ever.
I would think that if you played golf, you've missed one that short. I think we all have. But under the circumstances, given the talent of the player, that's a putt that should go in. But Lucas Glover's had trouble with the short stick there for a while.
In fact, didn't he change?
Went to the long putter.
Because he's got the yips.
And he yipped that one.
With the long putter, he yipped it. That's tough to do. So anyway, so he didn't qualify. The 13-year-old you may have heard about was trying to make U.S. Open men's history, be the youngest qualifier. Jaden's, I don't know if it's Song or Soong, because it's two O's, S-O-O-N-G. Anyway, 13-year-old from California. Yeah, he missed it by 13 shots. He shot 73, 76, trying to qualify out in Los Angeles. But still, 13-year-old makes it to the final round of qualifying. There was a story about Hovland, who wins the Memorial, and just a few miles away, they're having the U.S. Open qualifier on the day after the Memorial. His college teammate, Zach Bacow, is playing in it, and Hovland caddied for him yesterday. 36 holes, carrying the bag.
That's
buddy
awesome.
Didn't make it.
That's awesome.
It is awesome. Some LIV guys qualified. Sebastian Munoz, Carlos Ortiz, they qualified. You know who didn't make it? Harold Varner III. Tried to qualify, didn't make it. He just won 2 weeks ago on the LIV tour. And this is where, by the way, world rankings come into play.
Absolutely.
Sergio Garcia
qualified. He's in.
Right. He's in. But Sergio at this stage of his career would not have been a top 60 player in the world. Harold Varner, I believe, Mark, would be a top 60 player in the world if we had even a legitimate world golf ranking system. Even with him not having any points over the last year, I think Harold Varner, he won on the European Tour last year in Saudi Arabia, ironically. But so you're Fred Biondi. You're the Florida Gator who's had a hell of a week last week. At the beginning of the week, you won the NCAA Individual Championship. Just the third Florida Gator to ever do it, by the way. There's been a few good golfers come out of the University of Florida. And then you get the deciding point in the team championship to lead the Gators to the national team championship. But because you're the NCAA champion, they reserve a spot for you in the U.S. Open. If you stay an amateur, you turn pro, we give that spot to an alternate. Sorry, you don't make it as a pro. So what do you do, Mark, if you're Fred Biondi? You got the RBC Canadian this week, and then it's the U.S. Open. Do you hold off turning pro for 2 weeks to play in the Open?
100%. It's a no-brainer to me. I'm playing in the U.S. Open, and I'm turning pro the Monday after.
He turned pro.
Yeah, I wouldn't have done it that way. I'd have played in the Open.
So what would you all have done? I'm guessing he's got to be in the RBC this week, right? I mean, he didn't turn pro to go play in the Korn Ferry event, did he? I mean, Fred Biondi. B-I-O-N-D-I. He's got to be playing this week. But would have been playing next week if he had stayed an amateur. So, Stuart Sink qualified. Now, I understand why Stuart Sink had to qualify. Yes, he's an Open champion, but that was 2009. And you get like a 5-year, you know, you're in everything after you win like the Open championship. Now, he can go play across the pond until he's 65, but I can understand why Stuart Sink is not eligible for the U.S. Open in 2023. Apparently, his wife gave him a pep talk, basically a little tough love. Said, go out there. Come on now. It's your type of golf. And he went out and got on a roll and qualified. And Michael Block played really well yesterday north of the border. 5 under for 36 holes. Finished 6th in his qualifier. There's only one problem. He only had 3 spots. He was 2 shots out of the playoff.
His son missed by a bunch trying in L.A., went 81-71.
So some of the highlights from the longest day in golf yesterday. 36 holes trying to qualify for the U.S. Open. And what is this? Is this the third round of qualifying? Second or third?
It's the third, technically.
Right. So, I mean, it is an Open. You know, this is what they talk about, U.S. Open, Open Championship. And this is what we thought nearly a year ago when it was getting really hot and heavy about LIV and the controversy. And we just thought, well, this would go against what these events are all about. They're Open qualifying events. You know, Sergio, and goodness knows Sergio can run his mouth and make a bunch of noise. And Sergio kept his mouth shut and went out and qualified.
Now, I believe they got right to the last round to qualify. And all the live, that's PGA Tour players and live players, depending on status, get right to the final event of qualifying. They don't have to go through the same gauntlet as the club pro in Fort Myers had to.
But remember, Sergio won the 2017 Masters. That gets you 5 years of the 2 Opens in the PGA. Well, that expired last year. So Sergio's, you know, got to qualify. I'm curious to see after. Now, I will say, if I was the RNA for everything that Sergio has done for European golf, I would not make Sergio qualify for the Open Championship. You could be mad at him and, you know, whatever. But come on. I would give Sergio a special exemption across the pond.
They won't. They won't, because they've dug their heels in even deeper, really, than the PGA Tour in a lot of ways. They've already thrown them off the Ryder Cup team.
Although Rahm is letting everybody know he wants him on the team. He ain't holding back. Listen, our team's going to be deeper and better than their team, but their top six guys are going to be really good. I mean, Sunday singles, they're going to have a numbers problem, but on Friday and Saturday, they may just, you know, Europe will do that. We like to play everybody. Let's get everybody in.
Yeah, they don't care.
No.
Captain's picks can sit all day Friday and Saturday and play one round if that's the way they want to do it. They've never had a problem playing the Ryder Cup that way.
Nope. And they don't even care if you like qualify fourth. You're somebody who plays only on the European Tour and you're fourth in points and what have you. And they just tap you on the shoulder and go, yeah, I don't know what to tell you. You're like our second worst guy. You'll play Sunday. If somebody gets tired or hurt, maybe I'll put you in late on Saturday. But you could take Friday off right now. But I mean, you know, Hovland's in good form. Rahm, Rory.
They're stacked at the top.
Matt Fitzpatrick. I mean, you know, they're going to be able to put four twosomes out there. I don't know about Sunday singles, but they could run the same eight guys into the ground, Mark, on Friday and Saturday.
But Sunday singles, anything can happen. It's really about making shots. And when they are at that level, we've seen upsets galore happen in that type of format. So just a couple of things we're paying attention. The longest day in golf leading us to the Open Championship and the Ryder Cup down the road here on Miller and Moulton. 21,000 is the text line. Got someone talking about the longest day in golf. Says, I caddied for a friend several years ago at East Lake in Atlanta. 36 holes, 10 hours. Paired with Larry Nelson and Bob Friend. One of the best days in my life.
Wow, Larry Nelson. Larry Nelson, a U.S. Open champion, two-time PGA champion.
Go qualify. Don't
know
what to tell you.
He won the damn thing!
That was a long time ago.
God. Man.
It's a reason it's the toughest tournament to win.
Larry Nelson's a Hall of Famer. I mean, he should have said, I'm a Hall of Famer, for goodness sake. Like the nicest guy in the world, too. A veteran, which is worthy of mention every day, but certainly on this day, D-Day. Another reason why Larry Nelson get passed over as Ryder Cup captain is just atrocious. Won the PGA twice. They run the Ryder Cup. Went 5-0, by the way. Larry Nelson was the first American to go 5-0 in a Ryder Cup. And they don't make him captain. And not only that, he learned the game from a club pro after he came back from serving. I'm sorry.
It's a sore spot with you, isn't it?
Really bothers me. Bothers Azinger too.
Miller and Moulton. Trying not to bother you right here on the Florida Sports Network.